Minnesota State Property Tax Subcommittee to order. We have a variety of bills in front of us this morning. The first three bills we are going to have presented at the same time. They all deal with the same subject matter, and so they all have some variations to them. And so at this point, Senator Gazelka to Senate File 4455, and I would move its introduction or to this committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You know, this is something that a number of us have been working on for a long time, Senator Nelson and myself. Mine is the smallest step of the three here, but if you embrace the biggest step, I'll be totally happy. But, you know, and it is the general levy on CI or commercial industrial, so business property taxes. And we, just so that the public knows, most of the property taxes stay local, but for CI or commercial industrial, there's another roughly third that gets taxed and then sent to the general fund at the state. And so it's been my goal and the goal of many to try to eliminate that and get back to where it was in the past, where there was just primarily for local taxes. And so my particular bill, Senate File 4455, lowers the total amount from $716,990,000 down $100,000 down to $616,990,000. And that's divided out across the state, across all the businesses. And so it's very simple that way. But my goal in the end is that we totally eliminate all of that. So that's my bill, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Gazelka. Next, we'll turn to Senate File 4077. Senator Jasinski, if you'd like to move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move Senate File 4077.
Please proceed.
And with that, thank you. And I'm joined, obviously, by two that you've been familiar with that have been working on it over the years. I'm relatively new in the game as this, but actually I've been involved in real estate for over 31 years as my real profession or my primary profession. And I see this the effect of this every single day. One of the buildings that I have is a commercial professional medical building. And obviously, you know, property taxes are a big issue down there. And of the property tax they're paying goes into what's called CAM. And then each member has to pay that CAM fee. And this existing building is paying $194,000 per year. And of that, about $68,000 goes to the general fund of the state property tax. That breaks down to about a dollar per square foot of that CAM. Current CAM is $5. That's 25% or a little less than 25% of that amount being paid. So it goes down to all the small tenants. It's not just big businesses that benefit from this. It's the small ones that are paying that fee. Every bit of rent they pay has to be passed on to a consumer and passed on to a citizen of Minnesota. So I won't continue on. You've heard the bill several times. You know it very well. But my bill would eliminate just the CNI elimination completely. I believe it's about $737 million. So with that, I'll turn it over to our next bill author.
Thank you very much. And Senator Nelson to Senate File 3694, and the chair will move 3694. You may present.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, this is a misnamed tax. I refuse to call it a property tax, Mr. Chair, because my bill seeks to repeal the misnamed statewide general levy on commercial industrial property. This levy was added 21 years ago, 2001. If you think how our world has changed since 2001, when this misnamed statewide general levy was tacked on to the property taxes that our commercial industrial sites already pay. Let's just be clear for the public. They do pay all of the county, city, and school district property taxes. And this bill does not change that. This bill simply removes that additional about 26-30% on top of those property taxes that come not, it's not a real property tax. I know you know that better than anyone, Mr. Chair. It goes right up here to this dome, right up here to this state capitol as part of our general fund. And that's the largest part of what my bill 3694 seeks to remove, which is that taxation that comes right here. It's not a property tax, we call it that, but it comes right here to be part of our general fund. Senator Jasinski mentioned an important point about how this property tax increases the cost, not just of the building owner, but of every tenant in that building. It becomes part of the CAM, becomes part of that triple net lease, is paying this misnamed statewide general property tax. And you'll hear testifiers today, one from Rochester, who will speak about how this misnamed property tax makes not only the cost of business doing higher in our state, but also the real cost of it as far as expansion, increasing employee compensation, innovation, all of those type of things. So the bill before me, before you, Senate File 3694, not only removes the statewide misnamed general levy on commercial industrial, it also removes the seasonal recreational property taxation, which was also put in at the same time that the statewide general levy was. And the cost on the removing the commercial industrial property tax, misnamed tax, is $748.64 million in 2025, and about half of that in 2023. And then, of course, just so you know, which I'm sure you do, the residential recreational property is a small portion of that, and that's about $41.69 million. So, Mr. Chair, as I said, the world has changed since this tax was enacted. First of all, we have a $9.25 billion surplus. Secondly, with already we saw this transition to e-commerce where our brick and mortar buildings, our brick and mortar businesses up and down our main streets were being challenged competitively from the World Wide Web, from this e-commerce, because they don't have brick and mortar buildings and they don't pay those property taxes, those real property taxes that pay for our county, cities, and schools. Well, then when COVID hit, they were closed down, but their taxes continued. Their Main Street taxes continued. But what also grew was the reliance on e-commerce. And that has made it incredibly even more difficult for our brick and mortar businesses up and down Main Street that provide the real property taxes for those local communities and are the bread and butter of our vibrant local communities to stay in, to stay competitive. And Mr. Chair, I know you can talk about the disadvantages about businesses locating across state lines where they don't have this additional 30% property tax. So Mr. Chair, those are my comments. I know you have many testifiers who will speak to the egregious nature of this misnamed commercial industrial property tax.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Before we have you leave the testifiers table and have the other testifiers come forward, members, are there any questions for the senators that you have at this point? Okay, very good. Then we'll have the other testifiers come and you would remain for questions afterwards. We have Beth Cadoon to come to the testifiers table, and Mike Fox, as I believe he's Zoom. And then we have John Reynolds and Sean Smith. So at this point, we will first turn to Beth Cadoon from the Minnesota Chamber. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Beth Cadoon with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I'm also here representing the United for Jobs Coalition. You should have a handout in your packet that lists the over 100 business associations and local chambers of commerce that are expressing our support for these three bills to repeal or to reduce the state general property tax levy. I'd like to thank this committee for the past support to reduce this extra fixed cost of doing business that's paid by businesses in addition to all their local property taxes. More work is needed, as the high cost of doing business is still cited as a top concern of our members. It reflected in business surveys and also reflected in national rankings that still place Minnesota's cost of doing business among the worst in the nation. give you an example why Minnesota's business property taxes is still much higher than most other states. For example, from the 50 state comparison study for $1 million commercial property in rural cities, Minnesota's property tax is just under $40,000. This is nearly twice as high as similar properties in North Dakota or South Dakota, $10,000 higher than Iowa, $13,000 higher than Wisconsin. Minnesota is even higher than California and New York. Minnesota's tax is $27,000 higher than a similar property in California and $12,000 higher than New York. So reducing this high fixed cost will help make Minnesota more competitive. One item I'll briefly address is the UI trust fund deficit that is still waiting resolution. We thank the Senate and the governor for your support to replenish the UI trust fund deficit in order to make sure the trust fund is solvent for workers, to stop the payroll tax increase, and to stop interest accruing to the federal government. Employers should not be on the hook for a UI deficit that was caused by government-imposed shutdowns enacted to stop the spread of COVID that caused historic layoffs, or on employers who that did not lay off anyone. The UI deficit is extremely critical to resolve ASCP, but it does not provide permanent tax relief. That's why this bill is so important, as it enacts permanent tax relief. I'd like to thank the three bill authors, and we would urge your support as you put together your second tax bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Next, we will turn to Mike Fox from Ace Home and Hardware. He is joining us through Zoom. And welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record. You're on mute at this point.
About now, sound check.
There you go. Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I own Ace Home and Hardware in Marshall, Minnesota. Each year I pay approximately $10,000 extra towards the state general tax from my business. The tax dollars collected by my local county, city, and school provide a direct benefit to my business with streets, sanitary and water services, police and fire protection. My local schools provide education and learning opportunities that benefit my business. This is the purpose of these local property taxes. I have no say in what the state does with my money, with the SGT. If I was able to keep those funds, it would allow me to grow and improve my business, hire and retain employees, which would all benefit our community. As a local business owner, I try to provide encouragement towards shopping local and local businesses, because I'm a big part of this local community. Local business owners like myself would love to keep these tax dollars locally. We feel we can do better with it. So after 2 years of this horrible pandemic, it would be awesome to see some property tax relief for the small businesses out here. I thank you for this opportunity to share my story.
Thank you, Mr. Fox. And next we will turn to John Reynolds with the NFIB. Welcome. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Chair Weber and members. Appreciate the opportunity to testify. My name is John Reynolds. I'm the State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Minnesota. NFIB Minnesota is the largest small business organization in the state, with over 10,000 members in every corner. NFIB Minnesota supports Senate Files 3694, 4077, and 4455, which would provide small businesses with much needed tax relief from the state general property tax. As you all know, a lot of small businesses are still struggling right now, and rather than rattle off a list of the problems, I'll just give one example. I talked to a great lady from Pine City. She runs a custom apparel business up there. They make hats and shirts and bags for sports teams and schools and church groups and that sort of thing. She's been in business for 50 years, great small business owner. Before the pandemic, she had 32 employees. After the pandemic, she has 16. She can't find workers. They pay good pay, but can't get people to come back to work. She can't get supplies. She told me her supplier, large t-shirts on back order for 2 months. So how do you do business as a custom apparel business when you can't get that kind of material? So as a result, she's contracting out these jobs to competitors, or smaller competitors, and she's making no money on those deals, but she's doing it just to keep her customers and stay in business. And this is a story I hear from members all over the state. So these bills are real relief for people like her, because she's still got to pay her property taxes, whether she was closed for 3 months in 2020. Her sales are still down. She still has to pay her property taxes. So reducing or eliminating the statewide general tax levy is real relief for businesses like hers. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Next, we turn to Sean Smith from the NAIOP. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself and proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, Chair Weber and members of this property tax subcommittee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning. My name is Sean Smith. I am the public policy director or the public policy chair for NAIOP Minnesota. NAIOP is the leading association for commercial real estate owners and developers. And in this role, I probably volunteering here today, serving my colleagues and the industry. Our association and members really view themselves as providing the physical infrastructure for not only all the businesses in this state, but also some of the businesses really around the nation. We support these bills, Senate File 3694, 4077, 4455. And then with this testimony, I have submitted two documents within your committee packet. And if you haven't already reviewed, I would ask you to please refer to these. Our organization has put together two phases of research that relates to commercial property taxes in general, but also specifically on this state general levy. In the first phase here, we compared our statewide general levy to that of the other 49 states. And what we found is that Minnesota is an egregious outlier in multiple ways. There are only 16 states that have a statewide property tax. And of these states, Minnesota is the only state to tax a specific real property type rather than all property types. Minnesota's effective tax rate on commercial property is almost three times as high as the next closest state. And the funds from these taxes do not go to a dedicated purpose. Minnesota is the only state that lets it go into the general fund. So that was the main findings of that first report. But recently, what we did on the second phase is we wanted to compare what these taxes do from a market level. And so we took a look at the four markets here in the state that have available data. The Twin Cities, Rochester, Duluth, and St. Cloud. And we compared it to roughly 45 other markets nationally. Specifically, we compared the market's average real estate tax cost as a percent of their total gross rent that a business would pay. Senator Jasinski and a few others talked about what that total rent is. On average, a business in Minnesota pays approximately 18% of their total rent goes to real estate taxes. So how does this stack up to the other markets that we studied? Minnesota has three of the top 10 markets and one just outside of the top 10. And taking the prize as the highest taxed market in our 50 market study, with over 21% of their rent going to pay taxes, Rochester, Minnesota. Now, both of our studies outline that even without the state general levy, a business can still expect to pay well above the national median and average tax amounts. This is due, of course, to commercial industrial properties having the highest underlying statutory classification rate. And please don't let others tell you that eliminating this levy would be a big win for big businesses and corporations. The Twin Cities, for example, there are 48 distinct office buildings that are home to over 21,000 distinct businesses, with the median size square footage of that business taking approximately 1,100 square feet. Now, the same businesses that fund these real estate taxes also fund a portion of our state budgets, and we would really like to see some relief given this extraordinary surplus. We urge your consideration of any meaningful reduction in this levy. However, the most efficient way to provide relief for all the businesses in this state would be to simply eliminate or phase out this general levy altogether. Thank you, Chair Weber, and thank you, Senator Nelson, Jasinski, and Gazelka for these bills.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Next, through Zoom connection, we will have Roz Peterson Ms. Peterson, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and you may proceed.
Good morning, Chair Weber and members. I am Roz Peterson on behalf of the Minnesota Shopping Center Association and CCIM Minnesota Dakota's chapter. MSCA has over 600 members that represent retail center owners, brokers, developers, property managers, appraisers, retailers, contractors, architects, and other vendors. CCIM is a nonprofit commercial real estate education international member organization. We agree with NIOP and others that have testified in regarding to reducing or eliminating the commercial industrial state general levy. MSCA represents brick and mortar communities, which the pandemic has forced closures, shifted consumer shopping patterns, and sustained hardship for our members and tenants. Already, our retail bankruptcies exceed the financial crisis of 2008. Any reduction in the state general levy will help our small businesses and local communities. Small business owners are people. Many times they make huge sacrifices to help make ends meet, making sure their staff gets paid before themselves. These people would be helped if the statewide business tax is reduced, since all property tax is passed on to the tenant, as we've already heard many times. In order to be fair to all taxpayers, if only a portion of the levy is reduced, we feel it is important to reduce the overall commercial and industrial levy versus expanding the exclusion deduction, which benefits some, but not all people. After all, the state general levy is already a small number of people paying a significant portion of the overall property tax. This is a better approach than potentially picking some winners and losers. And thank you so much for your time, for listening, your consideration, and your service to our state. Appreciate the time to take the time to testify.
Thank you very much, Ms. Peterson. And then finally, we have Melissa Brinkman, who is also joining us through Zoom. Ms. Brinkman, please identify yourself for the record and you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. My name is Melissa Brinkman and my family owns Custom Alarm here in Rochester, Minnesota. And I appreciate Chair Weber and members of the committee the opportunity to speak this morning on behalf of the constituents here in Minnesota, Rochester. We're a small business here in Rochester, and it's interesting to hear Mr. Smith talk about Rochester being one of the highest places that are taxed, and I can attest to that. We pay a significant amount in property tax, and as others have testified, you know, I definitely support infrastructure with regards to the city, this school district, the county, and for this to be just straight dollars going to the capital to be able to use without any input from others. In particular, I mean, we are trying to be as competitive as we can, and the world continues to change. And as was already shared with the committee, that it is difficult and more difficult with online and other businesses outside of our state competing. And here we have 70 employees and looking at how I can continue to be competitive and give them raises and be fair with regards to compensation and other things, trying to get the cost of goods down. This all gets passed on to consumers in some way, shape, or form, or our profits are suffering because of it. So as a small business, we do look at every dollar. Right now, we pay almost $80,000 in property tax. Of that, $17,000 of that is the general state general tax, which does align with what Mr. Smith said, which is just over 21% of our total property tax. So I would just say that I definitely support these three bills, 44, 55, 40, 77, and 3694, and just greatly appreciate the opportunity to share my thoughts this morning and hope that you'd consider supporting these as well.
Thank you very much, Ms. Brinkman. That is the final testifier that I have on my list. Is there anyone else in the room that would like to testify at this point? If not, we will, before we turn to questions, Mr. Sylvia, it was indicated that this tax started in 2001. And might you give a little of the background as to why it was done at that point in time?
Mr. Chair and members, prior to the 2001 legislative session, there existed a general education property tax levy, and that was repealed. And in beginning in with the 2001 legislative session for taxes payable 2002, the state general levy was imposed for commercial industrial properties and for cabin properties. The total amount for taxes payable in 2002 was set at $592 million, but beginning in taxes payable in 2003, the state levy was indexed for inflation, and the inflation amount was then set to be deposited into an education reserve account, but that education reserve account was repealed in 2003 prior to it sort of taking effect and before money was transferred from the general fund to that account. So beginning in 2002, all the money collected from the state general levy was deposited into the general fund, and there existed no education revenue account at that time.
Okay, very good, thank you. Questions, Senator Klein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the authors. And just a comment first, I've been notified that none of the streaming services for this hearing are up. So if anybody from Senate Media Services is alerted to that, people on the outside are not able to watch our hearing right now. And I actually appreciate the discussion around the three bills and the history from Mr. Sylvia about the original intent of the legislation. Sounds like the inflator was going to be dedicated to education, and that not only never happened, it just never happened. So the original intent was lost, and now these funds are deposited into the general fund. I actually appreciate the concept of sort of trying to revert them to original purpose, and as Senator Gazelka said, to relieve local property tax burdens. The concern I would raise is that, and I'll review it, but of course these three bills cost or decrease revenues by very substantial amounts, and certainly amounts that are disproportionate to what we have heard for residential property tax relief this year. We all know we're hearing from all our constituents. It's been brought up in this committee many times. Seniors who are concerned that they can't stay in their homes, and you know, young working families who are being priced out of their homes due to rapidly rising market values. And as we look at what we've done for CI property taxes, certainly this committee has not yet heard anything close to that for residential property tax relief. I think it's also worth reviewing what we've sort of done since I got to the legislature in 2017 about this. Of course, in 2017, we repealed the inflator, which is estimated to cost $1 billion in revenues over the next 10 years. In 2019 and 2021, we relieved the CI levy and expanded the market value exclusion to the tune of $100 million in 2019, $50 million in 2021. So we've done this kind of repeatedly in the last several tax bills, and again, have not addressed residential property taxes to that degree. It's also, I guess I want to mention, as Senator Bach would if he was seated here with us, that half of the owners of CI properties, of course, live out of state. If we give them a substantial tax relief, will they pass that on to tenants? Maybe. There's no guarantee of that. And so I'm interested in the conversation on reforming the intent and purpose of this levy and possibly decreasing it. But we certainly need balance with residential property taxes. And those are my comments.
Good. Thank you, Senator Klein. Are there any other questions or comments from members of the committee? Seeing none at this point, Senators, you have any final comments concerning your bills? Okay, very good. With that, Senate files 4455, 4077, and 3694 will be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you very much. Next, we will turn to Senate file 1476. This is the Class 1C property provision modifications. Senator Rood, you and your testifiers may come to the table. Welcome, Senator Rood, and Senator Jasinski moves Senate file 1476. So you may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1476 modifies the tier rates for Class 1C property, which of course is our resorts. And this started, the 2001 tax committee must have been really, really busy because this started in 2001 also. But it's only been addressed one time in 21 years. And we think it's time to look at those tiered rates as the resort property values have really skyrocketed. So this bill provides that the first $850,000 of the market tier, or the market value in tier one, and the market value from 851 to 3,100,000 is tier two, and any value over that 3 million mark will be tier three and remain subject to the state general levy, which you can repeal like anyway. So, with that, I'll leave this to my testifiers. Who would
very, very good. Before we proceed, Senator Root, I believe you also have a delete all amendment yes. To 1476, the A1 amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And so at this point, before we proceed, Senator Jasinski moves amendment 1476 A1. It would be first stop. It would be an author's amendment. And all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Amendment is adopted. Now we may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Carlson.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Joel Carlson. I'm honored to be here today on behalf of the community of Minnesota Resorts, a group I've represented since 1997. With the chair's permission, I'd like to have Mr. Worley go first, and then I maybe have a couple closing comments at the end.
Very good. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please introduce yourself for the record. You may proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. My name's Jim Worley. I own and operate with my wife, Kristen, Sunset Bay Resort on Dead Lake in Otter Tail County. We've owned our resort for 10 years. It's a 10 cabin, 8 campsite resort within the 1C classification, respectfully called a ma and pa resort. We own, operate, and run the resort on a day-to-day basis. The 1C classification recognizes the unique function of a resort in that it sits abutting a lake, as well as used seasonality-wise for a resort. We operate within 250 days as a commercial business, renting our resorts out to guests. Through market dynamics over the past 14 years since the 1C tiers were increased last, our property valuations have increased significantly. With Explore Minnesota Tourism, they do an annual analysis of the number of resorts and the sales tax paid by resorts each year. Since 2000 and I forget the year exactly, since 1985, the number of resorts in Minnesota has decreased over 50% from 1,400 in 1985 to just under 700 now. That decrease in resorts significantly reduces the opportunity of Minnesotans to enjoy the lake and enjoy the tradition that is the Minnesota resort, an opportunity that we take great pride in providing. The dynamics in terms of the increase in property values is even more significant over the past couple of years. What we've noticed is that lake property is very, very popular right now. Through COVID, many people are working from home. What used to be a desire of individuals was to obtain a corner office with a view. Now that office is at the lake with a view. Many people have gone to the lake, sought out those properties and purchased them. What's happening is properties are selling with multiple offers, over ask, without inspections, which increases our value subsequently also. We haven't seen the total effect of those yet through the pandemic because that still occurs to this day. In addition, today's resorter has become very business savvy. We've increased our property values through expansion and renovation. Through those same Explore Minnesota Tourism surveys, you'll note that in 2019, annual sales through resorts only were $321 million, with sales tax generated of $19,585,000 as of 2019. Those numbers continue to increase, even though the number of resorts is half. The reason that is we've continued to expand and renovate to occupy that capacity and still allow us to offer the resort opportunity to Minnesotans throughout the state. To continue to do this, we ask that you review the tiers for increase and allow us the opportunity to continue and expand and fill that void. Once a resort disappears, because of the capital intensity to start a new one, it will never come back. New resorts started today. I know of one campground in my county. Many resorts are under the constant pressure of running day to day, as well as obtaining employees and the different factors that affect every business. But relief through this, since it hasn't been increased since 2008, would allow us to continue to apply capital to our properties and expand. I thank you for your time and would be open to any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Worley. Then, Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think Mr. Worley really summed it up well. Our problem when we came here in 2001 in this very committee room was that assessors assess property at the highest and best use, and they are assessing resorts as a breakup value because that is, quite frankly, the highest value for that property is to break it up and sell it for individual use. And we know that that is a disincentive to remain in business when the value of your land is worth more than the value of your business as a going concern. It's very hard to many times, and I brought a bobber for you, Mr. Chair, as we bring to the something to the Capitol every year to remind people of the importance of resorts in Minnesota. You know, we know that when a resort is gone, it doesn't come back, as Mr. Worley indicated, and so this is one way that the legislature can help address the single largest business expense that resort operators have. You know, we come here and don't ask you to make the sunshine or the fish bite. We ask you to do measurable things that can help resorts stay in business. In many places north of Highway 10 or Highway 94, tourism is the central industry. And without the lodging that resorts provide for people to come to these communities, everything is impacted, whether it's the bait shop, the grocery store, the local cafe, the gift shop. All of those are dependent on having the lodging in place that resorts provide. And that's why it's so important, like keeping our agricultural homestead taxes the way you are trying to address them. All the resorts in this classification are homestead resorts. They all live on their property. They abut Lakeshore. And so much like the farm situation, we're trying to keep them in business, and we appreciate your consideration and absolutely be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. I have a question, and I understand what you're saying. They're looking at highest and best use of a resort property as being broken up and sold for individual residential lots to determine the land value. I assume, however, Mr. Worley, that the assessor still puts a value on your buildings as well that are located on the resort property. Is that correct?
They do.
And I think that perhaps there does need to be a discussion with the department, because as a real estate appraiser, once you determine the highest and best use, that's different than that which the buildings support. All of a sudden, you should actually be reducing the value of those buildings because they do not contribute to that highest and best use. I do think that it's probably time for the department to take a look at their valuation process because, as the old saying goes, you can't have your cake and eat it too. And I think at this point, both elements being fully valued does create an unfair situation for the resort properties. I'm not sure that this session will be able to fix that, but I do believe it's an area that does need to be discussed. Because if we wish to value the buildings because of the for the operation and the and reflect the value of the operation, then probably we shouldn't be valuing the land under a different highest and best use. So we will take a look at that. I will make an inquiry of the department in that regard, and that in the meantime we will try to deal with what we can deal with. So any other questions or comments? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a comment, I want to thank Senator Rood for bringing this bill. I have several of these type of resorts in my district as well. And they're such historic places, and it's tougher and tougher these days with all the regulations being put on them between county zoning and Minnesota Department of Health and the lack of funding for township roads that lead to a lot of these facilities. There's just a ton of things going against them, and they have such a great history in our state with obviously the land of 10,000 lakes. There's just, it's a very important thing to continue on with that. So this break would really help that. Cause again, I know from a real good friend of mine who has one of these resorts, has been in the family, is in his fourth generation, and it's huge. And again, they're being hit on all sides for regulations and taxes and all kinds of different things. So I think this is a great bill. I want to thank Senator Rood for bringing it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Jasinski. And just brief follow-up, and I appreciate your comments, Mr. Chairman, about the evaluation process, because when we first started bringing this issue to the Capitol, we talked about an income approach. These people are in business generally 3 months, right? That's why we care about the school calendar and all these other things that impact us. That's what they have, and we talked to them about using an income approach just to valuing the resort and base it on their income. This tiered model is what we came up with to try and address that, because they didn't want to move away from highest and best use, but we would welcome that conversation to have a different evaluation about how they run their businesses, because there could be a more fair way to do it, because when Lakeshore is running $8,000 to $9,000 a foot on Gull Lake, and you're trying to run a business on 3 months of rentals, is very difficult. So we appreciate your comments and welcome your support.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could make one comment also.
Yes, certainly, Mr. Worley.
These resorts, the communities within where they reside, they're economic drivers for the community itself. We bring in, I'll call it, new money every single week during the summer that supports the businesses and the surrounding communities. So this bill really isn't just about resorts. It's about the communities in which we reside and supporting them as well through this break. I guess I'll call it a break, but it putting us back at the same level that we were in 2008.
Thank you, Mr. Worley. And certainly as we take a look at the situation, we recognize that many families are not going to be able to afford the cost of a lot on a lake to build a seasonal home, recreational home. And quite frankly, the resorts are their main opportunity to actually have a lake experience. And certainly you fulfill a vital and important role for the Minnesota family, as well as our outstate visitors that come to your facilities as well. Senators, any further comments or questions? If not, final words from you, Senator Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to have this conversation and for folks to realize how important resorts are to, in so many ways, to our economy and especially our families. And like you mentioned, Mr. Chair, it's a way for Minnesota families to enjoy the lakeshore that has really become unattainable price-wise. And so it allows our families from all over the state of Minnesota to enjoy the great resources that we have. So I would appreciate your support today.
Very good. Thank you very much. With that, Senate File 1476 will be laid over for, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Next, we will go to Senate File 3340. We have Senator Housley and then Mayor Jesse Priner and Mayor Mary McComber. And at this point, welcome to the committee, Senator Housley, and Senator Klein moves Senate File 3340.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have the A1 amendment, okay. And this is my first stop.
And Senator Klein moves the A1 amendment. This would be an author's amendment. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion's carried. Amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Senator Hosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What the amendment did was just expand it under the section 477A to include townships. What this bill does, it's a low aid municipality distribution. It's a modest effort to address lack of aid to small cities and towns in the metropolitan area due to inequities in the formula used for aid and tax-based sharing. Each city that is eligible is a net payer into the fiscal disparities pool, meaning that they contribute more tax base than they receive back. Each city is also under 5,000 in population, meaning they don't qualify for the gas tax, even though many of their residents commute to work, sometimes most of the times even further than the rest of the folks that do contribute to it. Each city does not qualify for local government aid. The formula is based on municipalities' net contribution to fiscal disparities, and it's capped at $200,000 annually, which approximates what the city might receive if it were eligible for the gas tax. Based on initial projections from the Department of Revenue, there'd be 40 small cities and towns and townships that would share approximately $1.9 million in aid during the first year of the program to fund the basic services. When and if any city qualifies for the gas tax, or LGA, they would no longer be eligible for the program. This bill was modeled after a 2017 enactment that was designed to address the disparate impact of fiscal disparities on several small cities that were outside the metropolitan transit service area. And like that 2017 legislation, this bill addresses inequities without altering the fiscal disparities formula. And I think you have in your packet attached amounts that each of the 40 small cities and townships would get using this. And I do have three testifiers, I think Mayor McCumber's online. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. First, we'll turn to Mayor Jesse Priner. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jesse Priner. I'm the mayor of the city of Columbus, and we appreciate your time and attention to this issue. In our small city, we're just north of St. Paul, about 20 minutes. We end up sending in $800,000 a year in fiscal disparities, roughly, and receive back to $200,000. So we've always been a net loser. And many other cities and Anoka County actually are all gainers. But our problem is, as we're developing, 35 North runs right through our city. As we're developing our commercial business district, every new wonderful business that provides jobs, taxes, et cetera, makes our problem worse. And because our city is 70% undevelopable because of wetland issues and DNR property and county parks, there's no way for us to balance our problem by adding 1,000 new homes or anything like that. We are nearly built out, even though we have a lot of space. So every new business that comes to town, I had a public hearing last night, a nice, great big business. We'd love to have them, quality people, a lot of employees. If they choose to build in our city, we're going to lose more money than we lost this year or last year or the next year. So this bill, thank you, would help address that because we won't qualify for the gas tax. There's no way for us to dig our way out unless something has changed that gives us a little bit of a break to keep a little bit more of our money in our own city.
Thank you, Mr. Priner. And what is your population right now?
4,955 or so.
Thank you. Sort of like my hometown of Laverne, you're just under that 5,000 yep. mark, yeah.
And again, since there's all wetland and lakes and DNR property, it's not going to build out to easily get us past that mark. That's our big problem.
Very good, thank you.
Yep.
Next we'll turn, is Mayor Mary McComber online? Welcome to the committee, please identify yourself for the record.
I,
I think you're muted right now.
There we go.
Very good.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing me to testify today on Senate file 3340. My name is Mary McCumber. I'm the mayor of Oak Park Heights. I want to thank Senator Housley for her persistent leadership in advocating for small communities like Oak Park Heights. Her leadership has meant a great deal to the citizens of Oak Park Heights and many cities and townships like ours. Senate File 3340 would provide much needed assistance to small metro cities that do not receive local government aid and contribute to fiscal disparities. And I don't want to be redundant, but we're a city that we're just about 4,700 people. And we not only have issues with not, we pay into the fiscal disparities and we are not a big receiver on that either. Likewise, our city is going to be facing, Senator Housley has been very helpful with our community as we face significant tax base loss due to the early retirement of the LNS King plant, which pays 40% of our tax base right now. Likewise, we also are built out and have no opportunities to grow any more than what we are. We also are the home to the Oak Park Heights Maximum Security Prison, Met Council's Waste Treatment Plant, Stillwater Area High School, and others that demand a lot of our services and obviously wear and tear on our roads. Each community, no doubt, has their own individual challenges. And Mr. Chair, as a former mayor of Luverne, you know firsthand the unique struggles that, our local governments face. And I'd like to thank you for your local government service. And I'd really like to thank Senator Housley for her continued support. She does represent, obviously, our city, but she's looking at all small metro cities and the challenges that we face. I'd like to thank you for your time today and would be available for any questions.
Thank you very much, Mayor. I appreciate you being online. And then our third testifier, please identify yourself for the record and you may proceed.
Thank you, Chair Weber and members. My name is Bill Griffith. I'm city attorney for the city of Columbus, and the testifiers have done a nice job of saying why this is an important matter and bill for the committee's consideration. I'll just simply point out that we've worked with Senator Housley and Senate staff to come up with what we think is a unique and kind of fair balancing act of the fact that each of these small cities has demands, but they have this triple strike against them with fiscal disparities, local government aid not being eligible, and not being eligible for gas tax. And in our small city, each year the city council struggles with how do we repair roads? What are the sources of funding? You know, our citizens continually put that, you know, their credit cards in for paying for their gas, but they don't get the benefit back. And that's a constitutional issue, so it's not easy to fix. We were careful not to touch the fiscal disparities formula because that's a thread that nobody wants to tug on too much. Or if you do, I'll leave that to the committee. We just thank you and especially Senator Housley for considering this bill and this opportunity to fix what is really an inequity. And I just want to introduce Elizabeth Mersko, our city administrator, and also Christy Luger, here, who's here from the city of Excelsior. And also note that we have a letter in your packets from many of the cities that would be benefited. I think we'd probably have 40 cities and towns on that letter if we had a few more days, but we wanted to at least represent those that are benefited by the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Griffith. I would like to ask, for those of us that are blessed not to have to deal with the Met Council, I would like to ask the question as it relates to the disparities, which I know is a topic you really didn't want to get into. But it's been mentioned that you pay in and get very little back. Could you tell us a little bit in very general terms how that works?
Chair Weber and members, thank you for that question. It is a complicated topic. For whatever weird reason, I wrote a law school paper on it. That was about 30 years ago.
Well, then you're the person to ask.
No, I forgot most of what I wrote. But in any event, the way it works for Columbus, we'll just take Columbus, for instance. The mayor talked about having this opportunity to develop commercial industrial. Since our residential base can't grow because of wetlands and public lands, we have to really grow our CI tax base. But our population is flat, so that formula works against us. So our population doesn't grow, but our CI grows. So we get to contribute more and more to the fiscal disparities pool without benefit. We're on the edge of the metro area. So we talked about the people commuting in and paying gas tax, but the formula really works against us every year. And so the council struggles with, do we continue to grow our CI base and continue to shovel more and more tax base into this formula that works against us? And that's the simplest way of talking about it. But each time, you know, a business, a CI business, commercial industrial business comes to our town, that tax base is shared with the whole metropolitan area. And we're a net payer. And you've heard from other net payers about those inequities, but we're a net payer with little opportunity to grow our population.
And has there been discussion within the Met Council ever of any type of reconfiguring of that formula?
Mr. Chair Weber and members, there over the years, there have been several discussions about reforming that, particularly when some of the larger cities were, they were net receivers and then they became net payers. So Minneapolis, for instance, was a net receiver based on how the formula was initially set up. So as soon as Minneapolis became a net payer, then there was interest in reform. But because it's a thread that's very complicated, every time you pull on that thread, someone is losing and someone is gaining. And so reform discussions usually get bogged down on who's going to win and who's going to lose.
So basically, it's the same kind of discussion we have with LGA and county program aid and all those kind of things.
Chair Weber, exactly why we try to not touch anything in those other buckets, because we modeled our program after the successful 2017 bill, which was fiscal disparities adjacent and didn't touch the formula. So it's, as you know, you wrestle with those discussions all the time. So we're trying to just create a little bit of a balance. We capped it at 200,000 per city. Some of the cities with bigger budgets could argue that it should be a higher cap, but we just thought if we come here with a modest proposal that addresses inequities, it might actually make it through this process.
Thank you very much. Members, any other questions or comments? Senator Zasinski.
Mr. Chair, just one kind of unrelated comment for small cities, since we have a lot of them listening today. So there's another great bill in the transportation bill that gives dedicated funding for roads for small cities under 5,000. So hopefully that'll get across the finish line. It'll help some of our small cities that we're hearing from today. So I know that's important as well. So thank you,
Senator.
Very good. If there are no further comments, Senator Housley, any final words?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Jasinski will be tuning in to transportation today for that bill too. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing this bill as it is very important to these small cities. And thank you. I hope this can go on through and get into your omnibus.
Very good. Thank you very much. With that, Senate File 3340 as amended will be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you.
Next, we will turn to Senate File 4158, Senator Chamberlain. Senator Chamberlain moves Senate File 4158 to your bill, Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This was originally proposed, as you see in your notes, some years ago. So this is just a kind of a small tweak to the existing language of the bill. First, it extends your eligibility 10 years for this property. And secondly, it exempts them from having to submit the exemption every year. That's it.
Okay. Very good.
And I have an expert testifier for me to explain that for.
We will turn to the expert testifier right now, Mr. Reed LeBeau. Well, identify yourself for the record and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Reed LeBeau, and I'm an attorney and lobbyist representing the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe. I want to thank Senator Chamberlain for bringing this bill and also for bringing the precursor bill, which created the exemption in the first place. The reason that we're before you seeking this relief today is one of the effects of the pandemic was when our building was closed and staff was not in the facility, the city indicated that they had sent the paperwork to file the notice. We never got it. It never got sent in. And so now we're in the position of having property taxes due because that paperwork didn't get in, even though the legislature authorized a 10-year property tax exemption for the facility. So this would correct that error and it would give us an additional 10 years as well. The reason that this is even required is because it's unique that a building owned by a tribal government does not enjoy the general property tax exclusion that another government building would. So if we were nonprofit, if we were a different type of government, it would just fall under the general property tax exemption, but tribal governments are not specifically given that exemption under the law, which is why we have the specific property tax exemption. So thank you very much, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. LeBeau. It's my understanding that the purpose of the bill would remove the need to make the request in the future. Could you give us any history? Why was the request made a part of the requirement in the first place?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. That's just a general requirement under the law. That was something that we were unaware of, frankly. And so there was no specific tie-in to that provision of statute 272.025. That's just a general requirement in these specific instances.
Is there any type of opportunity if the property were ever sold that it could be missed, that situation exists, or?
If the property, Mr. Chairman, if the property were to be sold, the exemption would no longer apply.
Okay, all right. Members, any further questions? All right, Senator Chamberlain, final words.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. With that, Senate File 4158 is laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, very good. Next, we will turn to Senate Files 3376, 3179. The first one, 3376, is the supplemental aid provision appropriation to counties. And welcome to the committee, Senator Rest. Please proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Chairman, did you want 3179 first?
Whichever one you wish with is fine.
Mr. Chairman, last year when we were, we had a similar bill, certainly for LGA, if not CPA. And almost every 10 years, we study and offer a different LGA formula. And we're due for that coming up, but in the League of Cities has a formula bill. It's Senator Klein's. But absent that, what we did last year was to make sure that under the formula, an outdated formula, I would suggest, there were cities that had less LGA than they had the year before, and so under the formula. And so what the two bills do, and this one in particular here, is to make sure that no city would lose LGA based on the formula. Every city would receive at least the same amount that they received the year before. And that became part of the tax bill. And I think it costs, and Mr. Arneson can correct me, but we put, I think, close to $5 million in it. And this is the same bill 1 year later. Different cities are affected differently. The total cost, Mr. Chairman, do members have this spreadsheet?
Yes, okay. We do.
You can see that the total infusion of aid to make that happen is on the first line, the state total would be $13,729,679. And again, I believe the number of cities is close to 150 that would receive some additional aid to hold them harmless going forward. Purists would say, well, that's what a formula is for. You use it, and sometimes you have the best factors in it that you can come up with. And if you're fortunate enough to have an increase in your tax base, then against the formula, then it's proper that you receive less LGE during that year. However, that's probably a better measure of the need. The first year or so, maybe even 3 or 4 years after the new formula is developed and put in law. The longer that a formula lasts, there are more, I would say there are more distortions that occur because of the formula. And in anticipation of a new formula, whether that's done this year, it's certainly on the table, or setting it aside and dealing with supplemental hold harmless aid. That's what this bill is designed to protect.
Okay. Good. Thank you, Senator Rest. Ms. Nauman, do you would like to testify to this bill, 3179?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the executive director of Metro Cities, representing cities throughout the 7-county metropolitan area. It's a pleasure to be before you today, and I will be very brief. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to comment on Senate File 3179, authored by Senator Rest. Metro Cities does support this legislation and its recognition of cities that are set to lose aid in 2023 under the current formula, much as many cities were set to lose aid last year as well. Several cities in the metropolitan area have experienced reductions in aid in recent years, and these reductions can often be precipitous, steep, unexpected, and they can serve to undermine both the purpose and relative stability in the LGA program. The fact that many cities under the current formula are experiencing significant reductions from year to year in aid was an identified pressure point that led to the analysis of factors in the LGA formula last fall by the four major city associations, including Metro Cities. I do want to just take this brief opportunity to encourage the committee and to reiterate what Senator Rest just discussed, to consider the updated formula factors in Senate File 3971. I am noting the two bills have the same four numbers that do address state aids, you know, as you continue to address bills that address state aids to cities. Those factor updates as proposed have undergone a rigorous analysis and have been determined to be the most statistical predictors of city needs at this point in time. Finally, Metro Cities does continue to support a formula-based LGA program and recognizes this program as part of the foundation of a functional state and local partnership. I appreciate your opportunity today, Mr. Chair and members, to comment, and thank you very much. I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Members, any questions or comments? Senator Klein.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Rest, for the bill. Certainly support the legislation in front of us, both bills, to hold harmless yet again this year, our county program aid and our city program aid. My concern, as yours, is that bills like this don't remove the urgency that we should be feeling to update the formula for how to assess city need and modernize that formula. Naturally, I'm a supporter of 3971, as was referenced by the city's organization, which has tripartisan authors here in the Senate and bipartisan authors in the House. But if we don't like that formula or have concerns about factors contained within it, we certainly should continue the urgent and difficult work around updating our formula since it's clear that the current one is has a obsolete. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Klein. Any other comments? Okay. Hearing none, Senate file 3179, or Senator Ress, final word. Mm-hmm. Okay. With that, Senate file 3179 will be laid aside for possible inclusion. Then 3376.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A1 amendment.
Senator Ress has the A1 amendment. Senator Klein moves the A1 amendment and moves actually 3376 as well. With that, it should be an author's amendment. All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion is carried. Amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Senator Ress.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and colleagues. This is the same notion of holding counties harmless who would receive less CPA in 2023 than they have in previous years. The state total supplemental aid that would be available is $2,241,424. So there's only far fewer counties. So that is even though they have very significant responsibilities. If you look at the the spreadsheet or the chart, you can see which counties would be getting more of the supplemental aid for a variety of reasons. And the ones that stand out to me are Kennebec, Dakota, Beltrami, Anoka, Kuching, any county that would receive more than $50,000. And you might say, well, $50,000, you know, what can they do with $50,000? Well, don't tell a county that, or don't make that kind of assumption. Every single source of revenue allows counties and cities to reduce property taxes, as well as provide city and county services that are not necessarily supported directly by the state. So this in terms of its cost is a more modest cost, but it serves the same purpose.
All right, good. Thank you, Senator Rest. Any comments or questions from members? Seeing none, any final words? Very good. With that, Senate file 3376 will, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you,
Senator Rest. Just members, so you are aware, the week that we come back from our break, we will be having a hearing regarding our TIF projects, the bills that have been proposed for that. I do believe also that I am going to have hearings on bills that provide transitional aid for communities that are losing some of the large generation facilities from their tax base. I'm not sure that we're going to be able to deal with that this year, but I think it's important that we put the item on the radar for future legislatures, and we will have hearings on those bills. With that, thank you for your, yes, Senator Chamberlain.
Can I be excused from the
You enjoy them so much, Senator Chamberlain. with that, everyone, this meeting will stand adjourned.